Of course, this weekend, once you get past the turkey and the mashed potatoes and all the vegetables and casseroles, it's all about leftovers on Thanksgiving. And leftovers, it turns out, isn't just a theme of this holiday. It's also a musical issue. And there are many musical leftovers down through the ages. And when we have trouble understanding a musical concept, we like to invite our friend Terrence McKnight, host of WNYC's Evening Music, into the studio here at The Takeaway. And explain, Terrence, you've brought some musical leftovers, and give me a shot of what a musical leftover actually is.
First thing on the menu, John, is a piece that's about 200 years old.
They last, these leftovers.
That's right. Beethoven wrote one opera. He completed one opera. He wrote it in 1805. But he wrote four overtures, four introductions to this opera, and let's get a sense of what the first one sounded like. So this is 1805. He decided, well, that didn't quite work because what the overture was supposed to do was supposed to get the audience's attention. There were no blinking lights, no PA announcer. So he wanted to grab the attention of the audience and kind of give them a preview of what was going to happen in the opera, the musical sounds. So he took another stab at writing an overture. Here's another one.
I guess he wanted that note to be longer.
It's like leaving the turkey in the oven just a little bit longer.
Yeah, I think so.
So that wasn't good enough. He took another stab, and then finally in 1814, he took the last stab at writing an overture, and he calls this one Fidelio. The opera is called Fidelio. Here's the Fidelio overture. And so by this point, Beethoven's hearing was, you know, it was worsening. So,
and a lot had happened in Europe between 1805 and 1814. That's great, that transformation.
So you hear this is a much bigger, broader sound, and maybe that had something to do with the audience, but his own hearing as well.
And the overture is more famous in some ways than the opera.
It is, because composers and conductors, they still use those throwaway overtures, like Bernstein, for example. He would stick the third Leonore overture in somewhere in the second act. And so they're still being recorded, these overtures.
So all four of the overtures get used, just like, you know, it all eventually gets eaten. It says
so
mom
they say.
After Thanksgiving.
That's right.
So what else you got?
Well, we'll go up to 1878 with Tchaikovsky, go over to Russia. And Tchaikovsky in 1877, he had gotten himself into a bad kind of marriage, and he got himself out of the marriage and was a little bit depressed about it, and so he wanted to write a violin concerto, had never done so.
His response to his marriage breaking up is to write a violin concerto.
That's right.
Interesting. Different people do different things. So anyway, he decided he'd never done it before. So what did he do?
He wanted to write a violin concerto, and so he did. He wrote one, three movements, and the violinist he wrote it for thought it was unplayable, too difficult. And so Tchaikovsky was a little, didn't have a lot of confidence writing for violin. And so he wrote two second movements. And I want you to hear the one that's played now, the one that's stuck, the one that when you go to hear Tchaikovsky's violin concerto, you're going to hear three movements. Here's the second part of it. So he calls that a canzonetta. But the first attempt at writing the second movement for this violin concerto, a lot of violinists still like to play it. So
because it's unplayable. I mean, who wouldn't? You want to show off, right?
So he called the first attempt a meditation. And we've got a recording of Joshua Bell playing the meditation. I want you to hear a bit of this. So even though it's not included in the concerto, Joshua Bell and other violinists still find it quite beautiful and get a lot of good use out of this leftover.
Well, it's interesting that even though it's called Unplayable, first time around, both versions live as satisfying musical events.
Yeah, and I think probably the Unplayable part had to do with those first and third movements that were a little more virtuosic, and the violin, you know, it's just all over the place. And
you know, we've advanced since the 1870s. Right. You may think you can't play it, but there are some violinists out there who will. You know, when I think of Leftovers, I think of it a little bit differently. You know, you made too much of a dish, that casserole that, you know, you got tons and tons of and you don't know what to do with. Something like this musically. Grateful Dead, Dark Star. Depending on what they took before the concert, that song is either 2 minutes long or 2 hours long. There's a leftover. Kind of a different idea.
Yeah. Well, our table was big enough for all kinds of...
What do you got for us, Dan, though?
Well, we've got a piece from 1930. Duke Ellington wrote a review for the Cotton Club in 1930, and he called the piece Swanee River Rhapsody. Here it is.
Perfectly nice song.
Mm-hmm. And it worked. It worked in the review. People at the Cotton Club enjoyed it, but it didn't really have any staying power outside of the Cotton Club, so Ellington stuck it in the fridge. 2 years later, he brought it back out and called it Lazy Rhapsody. Didn't change a note. Same music. Different title.
And it's a hit.
You can buy it on iTunes.
That's great. Moral of the story? Just change the name. It's not mashed potatoes 2 days old. It's potato fritters. Terrence McKnight, thanks so much for coming in to talk about musical leftovers here on The Takeaway. Terrence McKnight, of course, is host of WNYC's Evening Music. Happy Thanksgiving, Terrence.
Bon appetit. Thank you.